How the pretty maid of Portolan convinced her judge. The maid of Portolan, who became, as everyone knows, La Tacherette, was, before she became a dyer, a laundress at the said place of Portolan, from which she took her name. If any there be who do not know Tours, it may be as well to state that Portolan is down the Loire, on the same side as Saint-Cyr, about as far from the bridge which leads to the cathedral of Tours as said bridge is distant from Marmoustier, since the bridge is in the center of the embankment between Portolan and Marmoustier. Do you thoroughly understand? Yes? Good. Now the maid had there her wash house, from which she ran to the Loire with her washing in a second, and took the ferry boat to get to St. Martin, which was on the other side of the river, for she had to deliver the greater part of her work in Châteauneuf and other places. About Midsummer Day, 7 years before marrying old Taschereau, she had just reached the right age to be loved, without making a choice from any of the lads who pursued her with their intentions. Although there used to come to the bench under her window the son of Rabelais, who had 7 boats on the Loire, Jehan's eldest, Marchandot the tailor, and Pecart the ecclesiastical goldsmith, she made fun of them all, because she wished to be taken to church, before burthening herself with a man, which proves that she was an honest woman until she was wheedled out of her virtue. She was one of those girls who take great care not to be contaminated, but who, if by chance they get deceived, let things take their course, thinking that for 1 stain, or for 50 a good polishing up is necessary. These characters demand our indulgence. A young noble of the court perceived her one day, when she was crossing the water in the glare of the noonday sun, which lit up her ample charms, and seeing her, asked who she was. An old man, who was working on the banks, told him she was called the Pretty Maid of Portolan, a laundress, celebrated for her merry ways and her virtue. This young lord, besides ruffles to starch, had many precious draperies and things. He resolved to give the custom of his house to this girl, whom he stopped on the road. He was thanked by her and heartily, because he was the Sire du Fou, the king's chamberlain. This encounter made her so joyful that her mouth was full of his name. She talked about it a great deal to the people of St. Martin, and when she got back to the wash house, was still full of it, and on the morrow at her work her tongue went 19 to the dozen, and all on the same subject, so that as much was said concerning my Lord Du Fou and Portolan, as of God in a sermon, that is, a great deal too much. If she works like that in cold water, what will she do in warm, said an old washerwoman. She wants Du Fou, he'll give her Du Fou. The first time this giddy wench, with her head full of Monsieur Du Fou, had to deliver the linen at his hotel, the chamberlain wished to see her, and was very profuse in praises and compliments concerning her charms, and wound up by telling her that she was not at all silly to be beautiful, and therefore he would give her more than she expected. The deed followed the word, for the moment his people were out of the room, he began to caress the maid, who, thinking he was about to take out the money from his purse, dared not look at the purse, but said, like a girl ashamed to take her wages, it will be for the first time. It will be soon, said he. Some people say that he had great difficulty in forcing her to accept what he offered her, and hardly forced her at all, others that he forced her badly, because she came out like an army flagging on the route, crying, and groaning, and came to the judge. It happened that the judge was out. La Portolan awaited his return in his room, weeping, and saying to the servant that she had been robbed, because Monseigneur Du Fou had given her nothing but his mischief, whilst the canon of the chapter used to give her large sums for that which M. Du Fou wanted for nothing. If she loved a man she would think it wise to do things for him for nothing, because it would be a pleasure to her, but the chamberlain had treated her roughly, and not kindly and gently, as he should have done, and that therefore he owed her the 1,000 crowns of the canon. Then the judge came in, saw the wench, and wished to kiss her, but she put herself on guard, and said she had come to make a complaint. The judge replied that certainly she could have the offender hanged if she liked, because he was most anxious to serve her. The injured maiden replied that she did not wish the death of her man, but that he should pay her 1,000 gold crowns, because she had been robbed against her will. Ha, ha, said the judge, what he took was worth more than that. For the 1,000 crowns I'll cry quits, because I shall be able to live without washing. He who has robbed you, is he well off? Oh yes. Then he shall pay dearly for it. Who is it? Monseigneur Dufou. Oh, that alters the case, said the judge. But justice, said she. I said the case, not the justice of it, replied the judge. I must know how the affair occurred. Then the girl related naively how she was arranging the young lord's ruffles in his wardrobe, when he began to play with her skirt, and she turned round saying, go on with you. You have no case, said the judge, for by that speech he thought that you gave him leave to go on. Ha, ha. Then she declared that she had defended herself, weeping and crying out, and that that constitutes an assault. A wench's antics to incite him, said the judge. Finally, La Portelaine declared that against her will she had been taken round the waist and thrown, although she had kicked and cried and struggled, but that seeing no help at hand, she had lost courage. Good, good, said the judge. Did you take pleasure in the affair? No, said she. My anguish can only be paid for with 1,000 crowns. My dear, said the judge, I cannot receive your complaint, because I believe no girl could be thus treated against her will. Hi. Ask your servant, said the little laundress, sobbing, and hear what she'll tell you. The servant affirmed that there were pleasant assaults and unpleasant ones, that if La Portelaine had received neither amusement nor money, either one or the other was due to her. This wise counsel threw the judge into a state of great perplexity. Jacqueline, said he, before I sup I'll get to the bottom of this. Now go and fetch my needle and the red thread that I sew the law paper bags with. Jacqueline came back with a big needle, pierced with a pretty little hole, and a big red thread, such as the judges use. Then she remained standing, to see the question decided, very much disturbed, as was also the complainant at these mysterious preparations. My dear, said the judge, I am going to hold the bodkin, of which the eye is sufficiently large, to put this thread into it without trouble. If you do put it in, I will take up your case, and will make Monseigneur offer you a compromise. What's that? Said she. I will not allow it. It is a word used in justice to signify an agreement. A compromise is then agreeable with justice, said La Portelaine. My dear, this violence has also opened your mind. Are you ready? Yes, said she. The waggish judge gave the poor nymph fair play, holding the eye steady for her, but when she wished to slip in the thread that she had twisted to make straight, he moved a little, and the thread went on the other side. She suspected the judge's argument, wetted the thread, stretched it, and came back again. The judge moved, twisted about, and wriggled like a bashful maiden. Still his cursed thread would not enter. The girl kept trying at the eye, and the judge kept fidgeting. The marriage of the thread could not be consummated, the bodkin remained virgin, and the servant began to laugh, saying to La Portelaine that she knew better how to endure than to perform. Then the roguish judge laughed too, and the fair Portelaine cried for her golden crowns. If you don't keep still, cried she, losing patience, if you keep moving about I shall never be able to put the thread in. Then, my dear, if you had done the same, Monseigneur would have been unsuccessful too. Think too, how easy is the one affair, and how difficult the other. The pretty wench, who declared she had been forced, remained thoughtful, and sought to find a means to convince the judge, by showing how she had been compelled to yield, since the honor of all poor girls liable to violence was at stake. Monseigneur, in order that the bet made the fair, I must do exactly as the young lord did. If I had only had to move, I should be moving still, but he went through other performances. Let us hear them, replied the judge. Then La Portelaine straightens the thread, and rubs it in the wax of the candle, to make it firm and straight. Then she looked towards the eye of the bodkin, held by the judge, slipping always to the right, or to the left. Then she began making endearing little speeches, such as, "Ah, the pretty little bodkin! What a pretty mark to aim at! Never did I see such a little jewel! What a pretty little eye! Let me put this little thread into it. Ah, you will hurt my poor thread, my nice little thread. Keep still. Come, my love of a judge, judge of my love. Won't the thread go nicely into this iron gate, which makes good use of the thread, for it comes out very much out of order?" Then she burst out laughing, for she was better up in this game than the judge, who laughed too, so saucy and comical, and arch was she, pushing the thread backwards and forwards. She kept the poor judge with the case in his hand until 7 o'clock, keeping on fidgeting and moving about like a schoolboy let loose. But as La Portelaine kept on trying to put the thread in, he could not help it. As, however, his joint was burning, and his wrist was tired, he was obliged to rest himself for a minute on the side of the table. Then very dexterously the fair maid of Portelaine slipped the thread in, saying, "That's how the thing occurred. But my joint was burning. So was mine," said she. The judge, convinced, told La Portelaine that he would speak to Monseigneur Dufou, and would himself carry the affair through, since it was certain the young lord had embraced her against her will, but that for valid reasons he would keep the affair dark. On the morrow the judge went to the court and saw Monseigneur Dufou, to whom he recounted the young woman's complaint, and how she had set forth her case. This complaint lodged in court tickled the king immensely. Young Dufou having said that there was some truth in it, the king asked if he had had much difficulty, and as he replied, innocently, "No," the king declared the girl was quite worth 100 gold crowns, and the chamberlain gave them to the judge, in order not to be taxed with stinginess, and said the starch would be a good income to La Portelaine. The judge came back to La Portelaine, and said, smiling, that he had raised 100 gold crowns for her. But if she desired the balance of the 1,000, there were at that moment in the king's apartments certain lords who, knowing the case, had offered to make up the sum for her, with her consent. The little hussy did not refuse this offer, saying that in order to do no more washing in the future she did not mind doing a little hard work now. She gratefully acknowledged the trouble the good judge had taken, and gained her 1,000 crowns in a month. From this came the falsehoods and jokes concerning her, because out of these 10 lords jealousy made 100, whilst, differently from young men, La Portelaine settled down to a virtuous life directly she had her 1,000 crowns. Even a duke, who would have counted out 500 crowns, would have found this girl rebellious, which proves she was niggardly with her property. It is true that the king caused her to be sent for to his retreat of Rue Quinquagrin, on the Mall of Chardonneret, found her extremely pretty, exceedingly affectionate, enjoyed her society, and forbade the sergeants to interfere with her in any way whatever. Seeing she was so beautiful, Nicole Beauperdice, the king's mistress, gave her 100 gold crowns to go to Orleans, in order to see if the color of the Loire was the same there as at Portelaine. She went there, and the more willingly, because she did not care very much for the king. When the good man came who confessed the king in his last hours, and was afterwards canonized, La Portelaine went to him to polish up her conscience, did penance, and founded a bed in the leper house of St. Lazarox Tours. Many ladies whom you know have been assaulted by more than 2 lords, and have founded no other beds than those in their own houses. It is as well to relate this fact, in order to cleanse the reputation of this honest girl, who herself once washed dirty things, and who afterwards became famous for her clever tricks and her wit. She gave a proof of her merit in marrying Taschereau, who she cuckolded right merrily, as has been related in the story of the reproach. This proves to us most satisfactorily that with strength and patience justice itself can be violated.